Ihr hört Radio Lora auf 97,5 MHz. Wir übertragen euch Veranstaltungen, Podien, Diskussionen von den INAF-Aktionstagen 2024.
Willkommen, so schön, dass ihr alle hier seid. Wir begrüßen euch ganz herzlich zur heutigen, jetzigen Veranstaltung des INAF. Das ist bereits die 5. Veranstaltung, wenn ich mich nicht täusche. Genau, mein Name ist Zahai und das ist Mittu und wir werden eine ganz kurze Einführung machen zu Beginn. Zuerst in Deutsch und dann in Englisch. Und danach übergeben wir das Wort an Border Forensics, die heute eine Veranstaltung machen mit dem Titel Grenzen und Race, eine gewalttätige Intersektion. Ich möchte ganz kurz was sagen zum diesjährigen INAF-Programm. Das Thema lautet Resisting Ongoing Colonialism und wir versuchen einerseits koloniale Kontinuitäten aufzuzeigen und gleichzeitig dekolonialen Widerstand sichtbar zu machen. Das ist nicht die erste Veranstaltung des INAF, des diesjährigen INAF, sondern bereits die 5. oder 6. Und heute um 18 Uhr, also um 6, wird auch noch das Abschlusspanel stattfinden, wieder im Clubraum. Wir möchten uns bedanken, einerseits bei den Panelists, die heute hier sind. Wir möchten uns aber auch bei der Roten Fabrik bedanken für die Räumlichkeiten, bei der Übersetzung, die ihr auf eurer linken Seite sehen könnt, und dem Awareness-Team, das auch gleich daneben sitzt. Gleichzeitig natürlich auch bei der Technik, die da hinten sitzt, die das alles super organisiert hat heute. Bezüglich Übersetzung, die Veranstaltung wird in Englisch sein und wer von euch eine Übersetzung braucht in Deutsch, kann jetzt kurz die Hand halten. Genau, vielen Dank, dann können wir nämlich euch diese Übersetzungsgeräte verteilen. Und während dieser Veranstaltung sind Fotos und Videos nicht erwünscht, insbesondere im zweiten Teil der Veranstaltung. Es werden allenfalls Leute aus dem INAF-Kollektiv Fotos machen, die könnt ihr an den Stickers erkennen, aber wir bitten euch, keine Fotos und Aufnahmen zu machen. Dann, wir haben ein Awareness-Konzept, das könnt ihr überall hängen sehen. Lest das durch, wenn ihr Fragen, Ergänzungen habt, dann kommt auf uns zu. Aber grundsätzlich gilt, dass wir alle verantwortlich sind für diese Räume und Awareness nicht nur an einzelnen Personen hängen bleiben soll. So. Und die Ansprechperson könnt ihr sehen mit den pinken Stickers. Eine Person steht da ganz links. Die Person ist heute Ansprechperson, aber auch wir werden hier sein. Dann zu guter Letzt, wir sind auf Spenden angewiesen, um solche Veranstaltungen möglich zu machen. Ihr findet QR-Codes auch auf dem Areal verteilt und es gibt auch eine kleine Kasse, die steht an der Bar, glaube ich. Genau. Dann bedanke ich mich fürs Kommen. Vielen herzlichen Dank.
Hi everyone, I will repeat everything in English. I'm Mitu, this is Zahai, and we're both part of the INAF Collective. We welcome you to today's event, the other ones were all panels. This year's focus is on colonial continuities, and especially we want to show how colonial structures are still interwoven in our lives, but also show the decolonial struggles against it. Today's event will be Borders and Race, a Violent Intersection with Border Forensic. And we already had many events, like 5 or 6, and after this at 6 p.m. there will be a closing panel. We want to say thank you to our guests that take their time to be here with us, also to Rote Fabrik and Fabrik Theater that we can use their space. We want to say thank you to the technique team and the translation. There are no photos and videos allowed, and any photos that maybe some of our team will take some photos. About awareness, since leftist rooms are not automatically discrimination-free, we want that everyone takes responsibility for the space and is aware of it. We also have an awareness concept that is outside here in the foyer space. There is also an awareness team present with pink stickers on them that is sitting there. Last but not least, INAF is relying on donations since we aren't supported by any financial institutions. If you can, please, there are twin codes outside or there's maybe a box for collections outside. Thank you and have a good event.
Hi, everyone. I'm Charles Heller. Really delighted to be here again at the Enough Festival. Last year, we were under a tent in the hot sun. Now we're in a much more formal space. But I very much hope with the same wonderful spirit that we experienced also last year. I'm here with Elio Panese and Angela Willem. And what we want to do over the time we have this afternoon together, it's a bit hard not to see faces. All of you are in the dark here, but we very much hope to make this an interactive and dialogical event. What we want to do is to share some of the investigations that we have been leading over the last years or that are still ongoing, as you will see. And specifically investigations that that address forms of violence that lie at that intersection between the violence of state borders and the violence of racial boundaries, right? How can we think this intersection? How does it materialize in the experience of migrants and racialized subjects who may not be migrants at all? What are the problems and challenges that need to be reflected upon when investigating such forms of violence in particular? How can we mitigate the risk that the strategies of documentation, of visualization that we use might contribute as well to reproduce the dehumanization of affected people in the representation of violence that we produce. So these are some of the questions that we'd like to think through together in a dialogical way between ourselves, but also we hope very much with all of you in this room. What we have in mind in terms of structure, just to give you a bit of a sense of what we've would like to share with you, is that I'll say a few words about that intersection between race and borders. And then I'll share a few investigations that we've led in the past, focusing in particular on the last investigation that we published on the Nador Melilla racist massacre of the 24th of June 2022. We published this investigation last June, 2 years after this massacre. And then Elio and Angela will share ongoing reflections on the ongoing investigation on the deaths of Roger and Zoe Willem 3 years ago. There is also a comrade from the commission who is, I can't see you right now, but you're somewhere there, and he's also able to intervene at some point. And at different moments, we'll try to create spaces of discussion together to make this, again, a dialogical space on the questions that we'll be sharing with you. Does that sound like an okay plan? So, race and borders, what would they have to do with each other, right? To try and start and very briefly think about this, I'd want to ask each one of you in this room, what do borders mean to you? What was the last experience you had of border crossing? How did it feel? How did it happen? Right. Does anybody want to share, you know, just first gut reactions? What's a border to you?
I remember when I was like,
I hear you, but if there is one, we can hear you. You okay?
I always am scared when we cross the borders, as if when we forget something and maybe we need to go to the police. And yeah, I'm always scared when we hold by one.
Thanks a lot. So a kind of moment of tension. Any other inputs? What's a border to you? Please don't be shy. This is not a test. Just first thoughts. What do you think of when you think of borders? Well, I can follow with what you just shared here. From my experience this summer of crossing also the borders between Croatia and Bosnia. So I'm a Swiss citizen, I'm white, and I was traveling with my family. And one of my kids, he constantly got confused between what is a pay toll on the highway and a border, right? So borders, there was a degree of tension. Did we have all the right documents, even with Swiss passports? But clearly for us, they were mostly a formality, even though we were crossing on the way other people who were walking up or in cars in the direction of the border between Croatia, which is now EU territory, and Bosnia, right? That northern border tip there. So for me, in my experience, even though there might be a bit of tension, I know that I have the right to cross that border. I know that as someone who is white, who is traveling with a family, there's very little risk that I'm, you know, subjected to control. But of course, that is not the people. Different people have a very different experience of that very same border, right? Any other border experiences? Come on, I'm sure, I hope for you that some of you may have traveled this summer. What was your border experience? I see a hand there.
It's about traveling, but I was in a train, and there they could corner and heard about my ticket. I don't pay for the ticket for drive the train, and he gave me a chance to travel forward, and to travel forward. He gave me a ticket, and then I saw he goes to another people of color, and suddenly she had. And then he said, "Give me your passport, and give me your passport, and you will pay with a I don't know what it was, but this person had to pay a lot of them." And I heard closely to them, and I felt sad, and I wish I could pay for him.
Thanks for sharing that. So there again, a very clear example of the way we are exposed differently to borders, depending on our passports, our skin color, our gender, etc., etc., right? One theorist who's been very useful for us in thinking about those intersections between state borders and race, but also other categories, such as class, is a philosopher called Étienne Balibar, right? And he had this argument according to which borders, state borders, right, that in principle, they're just, you know, separating one state from another, national citizens from foreigners, in fact, are what he calls overdetermined. They're shaped by many other social, political, cultural, economic boundaries, right? And as a result, he used to say, 30 years ago, he was writing this article, What is a Border? He used to say borders are polysemic, meaning precisely that borders have different meaning for different people depending on how they're positioned within these intersecting categories, right? And race plays an absolutely fundamental role in shaping borders today. Often this is not explicit in regulations. It doesn't say, you know, say in Swiss or EU regulations, people of color, black people, Muslim subjects have no right to cross Europe's borders, right? And yet, racial categories that were foundational for national migration policies have largely been integrated into European legislations and categories and continue to organize a kind of racial class division of the right to mobility, even if this is not explicitly formulated in legislations, right? And very simply, you just need to go to basically any European border, whether it's an external border, an internal border, and you see the way different people, in particular according to their color, but also to their, you know, expressions of class as well, such as dress, are treated differently, right? So our work at Border Forensics seeks to develop methods to analyze different forms of border violence that materialize across migrants' entire trajectories, right? We've conducted investigations on the effects of borders in Niger and demonstrated that increased border control led to more dangerous and lethal crossings for migrants. We've looked at the role of Frontex drones in the central Mediterranean that you see mapped here in the veritable pushback machine operating between Italy and Libya. We've looked at the Nador Melia massacre that I'll mention in a second, but also borders within Europe, such as the deaths of Matthew Blessing at the borders between Italy and France. But also, as Elio in particular and other colleagues within Border Forensics have been looking at, borders also operate within countries. In fact, borders operate within different institutions. Think of universities. Borders operate in the train, whether you're at the border or within a country. Borders position us differently in this room itself, right? And borders then often intersect with the boundaries of race, which turn spaces of transits, in particular, into dangerous spaces for negatively racialized subjects, whether they are migrants or not, as we'll see with the case of Roger Inzoy. Now, I want to mention briefly two investigations to try and share more specifically some of the problems that we face when we investigate specific forms of violence targeting black people in particular. And the two cases I want to mention are one is the first investigation we led within the Forensic Oceanography Project back in 2011. And it involves a form of highly indirect violence for which there were almost no images. And The other investigation I want to mention is the Nador massacre, in which, on the contrary, we have a form of brutal and direct violence, and also an overabundance of images. And I'll try to simply highlight that these different investigation, different forms of violence, different material, generate distinct problems that we need to address to try and conduct critical investigations, right? The first case, and I'll be extremely brief then, is the Left to Die Boat case. This incident occurred in March 2011 in a context of repressed uprising in Libya that was seeing renewed crossings, but also a context of violence in Libya that was being aggravated by the NATO-led military intervention against the Gaddafi regime, right? Now, that intervention turned the maritime space off the coast of Libya into, simply put, the most surveyed waters on Earth at the time, right? You can see here, 24th of March 2011, 38 warships were deployed off the coast of Libya, right? And yet, in that very same space, there were more than 1,500 deaths that year. And there were a number of indications that military actors, in particular state actors more broadly, were failing in their obligation to rescue any passenger found in distress, right? We worked with a coalition, and I'll be extremely brief, on what came to be known as the Left to Die boat case, a boat that left the coast of Libya on the 27th of March and that ran out of fuel after less than 24 hours. Despite several distress calls through which the passengers provided their exact position, despite repeated interactions with military helicopters, as well as drifting in vicinity to a large warship, these 72 passengers were abandoned to 14 days of drift within NATO's maritime surveillance area, right? And only 9 people survived. Now, as we began working on this investigation, initially, the only evidence that we could access were the testimonies of some of the 9 survivors. Here you see Dan Haile Gebre. And there was, in fact, only one single accessible image. This photograph, taken by a French surveillance aircraft in the early afternoon of the 27th of March. You can see that the boat's motor is still functioning, right? It's leaving a wake behind it. So it's before the boat ran out of fuel. You can't really discern the faces or identities of the passengers, but I can tell you that the majority were Eritrean, Ethiopian, some were from Ghana, Nigeria, right? So all subjects who are denied the access to safe means of transport to access EU territory, and who, as a result, have to embark on dangerous means of crossing, right? So here, in the absence of almost any images apart from this one, we relied on different georeference data, such as distress signals. We modeled the boat's drift. And in this way, we could reconstruct the boat's trajectory over its entire trajectory, right? Over its 14 days of drift. And you could see that it was, throughout its entire trajectory, within NATO's maritime surveillance area, right? So the question, of course, became, well, where were those 38 warships that you saw on the slide? And to try and answer that question, we used satellite images, right? And here you see that there were many large vessels measuring more than 75 meters present in vicinity to, the drifting boats indicated in yellow, right? The closest ships, all of which had received the distress signal, could have reached the boats in less than 2 hours, right? Now, this image was very important for our investigation, right? But it also raised problems, right? When we use satellite images, do we not risk reproducing the surveillance gaze of states? Do we not risk revealing the trajectories of illegalized migrants who are trying to stay hidden from states, right? Here, the resolution of the image was crucial. The resolution, again, is 75 meters, meaning that only large vessels would be revealed by that image. The boats of migrants, often rubber boats or 10, 15 meter boats, would be beneath the threshold of resolution, right? And this is an example of how we try to approach investigations and also our use of different forms of evidence. We try to exercise what we describe as a disobedient gaze. We try to reveal what states are seeking to hide, and we try to keep in the shadows that which they are seeking to reveal, right? And my point is that exercising that disobedient and critical perspective needs us to ask new questions for each investigation we engage in, depending on the form of violence and the type of evidence that we are using. The view from above, enabled by satellite images, raises some problems. Again, the gaze of surveillance. But another would be that these forms of objectifying representation risk occluding the very experience of the victims and survivors, right? And here what we tried to do was to combine those means within a synthetic video where you have both the means of surveillance but also the embodied experience of the survivors through their testimonies. So satellite images raise problems, but close-up perspectives, close-up images of violence raise other different and no less difficult problems. And that's what I'd like to share as well by describing our recent investigation into the Nador massacre. Let me apologize. I had a few video excerpts that I wanted to share, but for the sake of time and also because we were having a bit of technical issues, I'll just share slides. But there are several videos that are accessible on our website, including, importantly, videos containing only the testimonies of survivors, their analysis of the violence, their demands, but also the video reconstructions that I'll share here. So, 24th of June, 2022. Some 2,000 migrants, mostly from Sudan, approach the border demarcating the Moroccan town of Nador from the Spanish-controlled enclave with a long colonial history of Melilla, right? They're channeled towards a particular border crossing point called Barrio Chino that you see pictured here. They arrive in the first courtyard, which is in the back, the Moroccan courtyard. They're immediately repressed by different means, tear gas, rubber bullets, stones, and other. They finally succeed in opening the door to the Spanish side, which is